Welcome to Sounding Off with Kim Munson. My guest today is Dr. Jill Vecchio, a dear friend of mine. She is a healthcare policy expert, also a doctor by trade. She's a radiologist. And today we want to talk about something that Jill really put on my radar, and that was Cloward and Piven. So, Dr. Jill, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Kim. I hope everybody's doing well out there.
Me too. We are walking through this COVID-19 China virus disruption. We're going to be coming out on the other side. But we need to get our brains around what has been happening. And you were really the one that alerted me to Cloward and Piven. So tell us, who are these folks?
So Cloward and Piven were professors at Columbia University. And they wrote several articles in the 60s. I think they were actually married to each other. And I think Piven is still with us. That's the female. They did research and wrote papers on poverty and how we could organize the poor and create disruption that would overwhelm a system and therefore move control of that system toward a more centralized governmental body that could then help to keep Democrats in office.
Well, and the Democrats, yeah, that we're talking about are not really the Democrats that of JFK. This is the kind of the new Democratic Party that we're seeing, or the new Democrat Party that we see now, that really wants to move towards socialism, government control, haves and have nots. But you mentioned that they were doing this with the poor. They didn't really care about the poor. They were using the poor to get to an outcome that they wanted to achieve, correct?
Exactly. And so the article initially is, it's called The Weight of the Poor, A Strategy to End Poverty. And it was reprinted in The Nation, where it was originally printed in 1966 in a publication called The Nation, which was a very left-wing publication. And it was reprinted on the 150th anniversary of the publication on March 24, 2010. It was reprinted. So it's
the
not
150th,
hard to find.
What?
It was initially hard to find. Pardon?
Okay. But at the 150th, what anniversary was that?
150th anniversary of the publication The Nation.
Okay, gotcha. Okay.
Of like the magazine. So
okay, got it.
They reprinted. So that's how important this article is, that they reprinted this article on the 150th anniversary of the magazine. So what it does, it establishes a template. So even though really the article is only about how to address the poor, the idea was, here we have a problem. Let's exploit that problem, overwhelm a system, create a crisis, and we all have heard the words, don't let a good crisis go to waste. Create
by
a
Rahm
crisis.
Emanuel. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. That then allows you to gain more power of the system.
It kind of sounds that's going on right now.
Exactly. And, you know, so I kind of made a list of different examples of where you could kind of say, wow, this is exactly what's happening. And they would use, the idea was in order to help the poor, their ultimate goal was they wanted the federal government to essentially pay a salary to poor people so that they could live. So there wouldn't be welfare, because that's embarrassing and blah, blah, blah. I mean, the left is really good at expressing outrage on someone else's behalf, right? So they're outraged about naming a football team the Indians, right? I mean, it's kind of silly. And then they make somebody else pay the price for their outrage. and it usually never really benefits the original group anyway. So they wanted the poor to have essentially an annual income for no real reason. I mean, you know, for not doing anything, so that the poor wouldn't do anything and they would remain poor because they would be paid this salary essentially to kind of stay where they were.
Well, and Jill, I mean, I was looking at headlines this morning and I saw something, I think it was the Washington Post, starting to talk about a universal basic income. That's kind of what you're talking about.
Yes. I mean, the thing is, the things that they proposed here are still exactly the same going on. I mean, this was a really important paper. And when they reprinted this, Piven had this little introduction saying, really, this wasn't that big a deal. I mean, you know, the paper was just about the poverty and we just wanted to help people. It's like, no. Sorry. No. This is the template. So the idea was they had community organizers. Who do we know that was a community organizer?
Barack Obama,
right? So, exactly. So they had community organizers go out, sign up as many poor people onto the welfare rolls, black and white and Hispanic, but in the 1960s, it was mostly poor blacks and poor whites. Get as many of them on the rolls as possible, especially they were going to start in New York City, and they did this. They actually did this, overwhelmed the welfare rolls and the government programs in New York City, and the city went bankrupt. So they overwhelmed the city of New York with welfare recipients and government program recipients, and then that in turn fosters the state or preferably the federal government. So they want to overwhelm a city, then they overwhelm a state, and then they always want it to go to a national level. So they want centralized control, which is socialism slash communism. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe in saying socialism in and of itself, because socialism is always meant to be the stepping stone to communism. So I always put the two together. So people may or may not agree with that, but I believe that that's the way it's supposed to be. Okay. So now, if you extrapolate that out, let's look at years over the years. What have they done? So now they want open borders, overwhelm the system, right? Mm-hmm. Let anybody flood in here, put them on programs, pay for their college, which we're doing. Then you have sanctuary cities. You have the Obamacare was a classic. I mean, this is classic Cloward and Piven. Obamacare, you create a healthcare system that's more central control, then you crash the current system. You overwhelm the current healthcare system. You overwhelm it with your new legislation. When the system crashes, like we're kind of in the process of now, when the system crashes, then the federal government can come in with more centralized control, which would be single-payer health care, universal health care, Medicare for all, right? That's exactly mm-hmm. where we are. This is all Cloward and Piven. Then we have overwhelming the welfare system, which happened under Obama. Then increasing the federal debt. He doubled the federal debt and the national debt, increasing trade deficits. He's turned over all of, as we know, with this crisis, the COVID, he's turned over, or not just him. I mean, it happened over years. So there are multiple people on both sides of the aisle involved in this, but turning over manufacturing, pharmaceuticals, medical supplies. How much stuff did we turn over to China, including intellectual property, and all turning it over to a communist country? What's that about? Unemployment. Unemployment numbers were sky high. Of course, that was from the mortgage lending crisis. But that mortgage lending crisis was also fueled by Democrats who overwhelmed a banking system to some extent. It was certainly made worse by the banks themselves, but overwhelmed a banking system by forcing banks or coercing banks to issue loans to people who could not pay them back. So the mortgage lending, the crash of that system was inevitable, but it was made to be an atomic bomb worldwide by the banks themselves and how they handled those bonds. So,
your point is it started though with government coercion, government force, And the coercion was really, it said that we needed, that you banks need to make these risky loans. We're going to back them up, but you need to make them. And so it started with government. It seems like, you know, all the, these problems start with government policy.
Right, because everybody, in the name of the poor, right? It was in the name of the poor. Everybody deserves to have a house. Housing is a human right. Every time they say this is a human right, get ready to have a system overload. Get ready to have an overwhelmed system. That's the point. It's all about centralizing control. Now, some of the things I mentioned, and you said it too, I think at the very beginning. So you want to centralize control at the federal level. Well, now let's extrapolate that out to a world level. The one world order people, the globalists, the new world order, one world economy people want to consolidate power worldwide into a single central entity. So they're just extrapolating Cloward and Piven from 1966 and using that as a template for moving toward centralized one world government. So whenever they vote the whole one world order, the EU and all that.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Don't you think though COVID-19, the China virus, is showing us that borders do matter? You know, when they talk about borders, my gosh, the left now says you need to have the border of your home. You can't leave your home or your apartment. So apparently they do like borders. And we are seeing that this globalist thing doesn't really work out. So there's a real positive that we're kicking the tires on the real effects of this centralized government. And we see the abuse of power as well. They're abusing power, saying that they care about people, but yet there's not common sense on how they're looking at it. They are not taking measured responses. They are just grabbing more and more power. And I'm grateful that we are seeing what is really going on. And I think a lot of people are having their eyes opened up.
Well, and it's interesting because all of these things that, just to take off from what you just said, because that's a great point. So all of the things that I outlined, open borders, Obamacare, increasing welfare, increasing federal debt, trade deficits, unemployment, and then we have the chaos and anarchy of race wars, the police, anti-police movements and protests and mass shootings. So that's all anarchy, chaos, right? So chaos is a ladder and all that. So all of this works toward their goals. Let's look at what has happened since President Trump took office. Open borders. Okay. He's trying to close the borders. That, you know, like their evil plan is being foiled bit by bit. He wants to fix health care. It's going to be a tough job, but I think he can do it. Wants to fix health care. In fact, Obamacare may go away because of the court cases, right, that you've talked about before that went through Texas, and we'll see if the Supreme Court hears that. Hopefully they will. He decreased the welfare rolls. He's decreasing the expenditures of the federal government in things like foreign aid and making NATO pay their share for the military, the amount of military aid we give. Unemployment was at an all-time low. Race wars, you're not seeing much. You're really not seeing much going on, right? The police,
but they continue to say he's a racist.
Exactly. He is enforcing the rule of law. So he's protecting our police officers. He's blocked the Green New Deal and all that. Now, with this outbreak, I'm alarmed at, I looked back on the timeline for the original SARS and have watched some episodes on YouTube and through several different outlets, as well as looking at the NIH and CDC websites themselves. The correlation between the original SARS in, 2003, how it started in China, the timeline of how it started, the timeline of how the Chinese government chose not to really handle it, because that also coincided with the Chinese New Year, which also allowed for international travel and large gatherings, right? Does this sound familiar?
Mm-hmm.
This is exactly what's happening with COVID. And COVID-19 is the disease associated with SARS. I'm getting a reverb here. I didn't know if you were repeating my words or not. So, sorry. So COVID-19 is a disease associated with SARS, which is the original SARS was SARS-1. Now this is SARS-CoV-2 because there are so many similarities, and some genetics experts say that the similarities in some of the proteins involved in this new, the SARS-2 COVID virus is too similar to be made in nature. So,
interesting.
If you want to bring down, and the response to SARS internationally was very similar. I mean, wow. I mean, people just freaked out and closed borders and all this stuff. It wasn't nearly so widespread, and it wasn't as virulent, but the reaction was pretty extreme. Not that many people died, certainly not compared to flu, although we talked yesterday a little bit about how the flu numbers get jimmied around. But now we have a second one many years later. Think mm-hmm. what would happen to the world, the entire world economy, world population, if every few years, and they could make it more frequent and more frequent, if every few years a laboratory, a bioengineered virus was released on an international basis and allowed to spread globally. The idea that somehow we think this virus could easily go away, but if they kept releasing a virus or allowed one to be released every 5 years, 4 years, 3 years, it would devastate the world economy. Or we would have to say, we just have to accept that there are going to be a lot more deaths because we can't shut down our economy. Do you see what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I do.
And this isn't conspiracy theory. We're seeing it right here. The similarities between SARS-1 and what this is, SARS-2, are uncanny. Uncanny.
Okay. You know, and you really don't want to have a tin hat kind of
right.
reputation on this. However, I don't think that the Chinese can be trusted. And when I continue to hear kind of from the mainstream media that, oh, this came from a bat and a wet food market, maybe it was released via the wet food market. But as you mentioned, you're connecting the dots. You're a doctor, so you understand science and that the similarities are so coincidental that it certainly would require a thinking person to say, wait a minute, what's going on here, Jill?
Yeah. I mean, you know, and I thought, and to me, I'm sorry, biological warfare started, almost every country involved in World War I was looking for biological weapons of mass destruction. Churchill, you know, talked about it in his memoirs. It was happening. Everybody was doing it. Do you think they just stopped? Just because they all get together and sign a treaty, do you think that stopped? No, it never stopped. Why do we think that didn't keep going? And China is definitely contracting, and we know that they're contracting with professors, researchers, scientists from all over the world. They have a thing in Wuhan, Wuhan University of Technology, Wuhan University of Virology, Wuhan University of Technology has this thing called the Thousand Minds Project or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's bringing in and collaborating with the laboratories of researchers and scientists all over the world, and okay. Lots of them.
Now, on this, and I actually just heard one of the other talk shows talking about this yesterday, and we mentioned this back when this occurred. This was in late January. Harvard professor was actually indicted on three separate cases for lying to the U.S. about his involvement with China's government. And his Charles Lieber, Dr. Charles Lieber, he was the chair of Harvard's chemistry and chemical biological department, or biology department, and he was working with the Chinese. And how he got busted was he had not, he was supposed to disclose that information, and he did not. But let's just think about it, Jill. This is the chair of Harvard's chemistry and chemical biology department working with Chinese organizations. That is absolutely astounding.
It is. And he also had contracts. The problem was, from our government's point of view, was he didn't disclose that relationship at the same time that he was doing research for the Department of Defense and NIH. Mm-hmm. He was getting funding from a whole lot of different entities. The guy was bringing in, he had to be bringing in close to, $20 million. In federal grants. He was being paid by China $50,000 a month and given $150,000 a year for living expenses.
Astounding.
Housing and living expenses. Yeah, what a gig. Nice gig. And then he's also doing work for the federal government.
It's astounding.
So, yeah, well, and he's the tip of the iceberg. What did I see? Something about some University of North Carolina professor, researcher, was working with the virology lab at Wuhan, Wuhan Institute of Virology. They had a level 4 lab not far from this wet market. They did a lot of bat research. And Wuhan Institute of Virology has been investigating coronavirus. Like I said, coronavirus is not a rare virus, but Some of the characteristics of it can make it spread because it's a cold virus. You know, how many people get a cold? So if you wanted to create a super virus, that wouldn't be a bad place to start because it's spread really easily through sneezing and air. It's aerosolized, so you want something that's respiratory spread or touch is easier to contain than something that's airborne. Right, it's the worst. Mm-hmm. The worst diseases are going to be airborne, or the biggest spread of a disease is going to be if it's airborne. So if you wanted a super virus, that's where you would start. And there's the idea that these two, and I would really like to have the genetics of it confirmed. I'm looking for that. The little genetic code. I heard somewhere something that I'm not going to talk about until I can find confirmation of it.
Yeah, but we always like to confirm. Yeah.
Exactly. But if you wanted to create a biological weapon, you might start with a coronavirus. You're going to use bats to do the research. Then you would maybe want to insert little snippets of genome of some other virus that would make it more difficult to treat, more difficult to diagnose, more maybe spread more rapidly, maybe kill more people, maybe, you know, be more virulent and dangerous. I mean, you maybe have something inserted so it would keep coming back, so you couldn't really get rid of it, kind of like chickenpox or something, right? Mm-hmm. So you can't really get rid of chickenpox. It just hangs out, or herpes just kind of hangs out in a little neural ganglion, and it may or may not show itself again intermittently. I mean, you know, when you really think about some of this stuff, you could do some really frightening things. But let's face it, people have been doing this research for 100 years.
Right, right. And I think on an international level, there was, quote unquote, this agreement treaty that we weren't going to use biological warfare on each other. Of course, I recall, let's see, was it Iraq? I want to say the early 90s, I opened up a magazine, I think it was Time, and I saw actually bodies of Kurds that they had used biological weapons on. So we do know that it continues on. But Jill, do you not think that in a way the Chinese got busted on this because of those two docks? Otherwise, we might not have known where it originated, and it would have just gone on. We wouldn't have had any place to start to look for some answers. But the fact that these two young doctors blew the whistle on this, and then one died and one has disappeared, I think that it's in a way it's kind of a gift that we realize that the Chinese are behind this.
Well, and I did see one. I think it's one. Maybe it was confirmed on another one. But I think definitely one source that I looked at said that because this happened over the Chinese New Year, the doctors first reporting it went up the ladder to the ministry or whatever in China, to the government, to tell them that this was going on, but they never heard back. And they're seeing more cases and thinking, this is not good. I have to do something about it. And since they do have interactions with international labs all over the world because of their collaboration with these researchers all over the world, one of these researchers sent out the genome of the virus before the ministry decided to act on doing something about the virus. Then the question is, did the ministry shut down any further communication about this? But thanks to this one doc, perhaps, or this one researcher, perhaps that's the only way that we know about this genome and know what the virus is. Because even though somebody blew the whistle and said there's this virus thing going around, we may not have known what it was, you know, until mm-hmm. then we'd have to start from scratch on investigating ourselves. And that
would have been really difficult.
Right. So I don't know if that's one of the physicians that was punished or died or disappeared, whatever. I'm not sure what happened to that gentleman, but thankfully, he did what he did, if that's the case. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm not sure. We may never know the real truth about all of this.
Right.
But I think it behooves us to not be constantly wary of them and constantly prepared for another round. And,
okay.
And that's what they said in 2003 when NIH published an article saying this is what happened with SARS. We have to be prepared for this to happen again. It says that in NIH. So I'm not wearing a tin hat here. The NIH said that in 2003 after the first SARS.
And what is the NIH?
We have to be ready for this again. A National Institute of Health, government agency,
okay.
National Institute
okay.
of Health.
Okay.
Yeah. So and the CDC has said the same thing in 2003. We need to be prepared for this to happen again. So,
okay.
Yeah, I'm not a crazy conspiracy person in that regard.
Okay. Well, I tell you what, let's bring this back then. We're talking about current events, but let's bring this back to Cloward and Piven. How are they connected?
Well, if you want to collapse a system, if you want to overwhelm a system so that, and let's say overwhelm multiple systems, because this is affecting so many countries in the world, this is overwhelming multiple very well-developed, wealthy countries. And if their economies collapse because of this, that's how you can get a one world order. So it's a matter of what the people, and now you've started to make the people submissive because we're agreeing to stay in our homes and not have jobs and all this, and you're overwhelming the world economy by we're going to be, what, maybe $4-6 trillion of additional debt from this because the government says it's not you guys' fault, it's China's fault. Good, yeah, try and get China to pay for it. They won't, you know. But again, I guess we could just not pay our loans, which I think is the best plan that I've heard. But anyway, it wouldn't be hard to collapse systems and kind of control the population through disease.
Jill, what I see here is that we have a real battle of ideas. We have this idea, Cloward and Piven, where it's basically government is central. They, you know, basically control everybody's lives. Or we have over here the idea, the American idea, which was put in place by the founders, the Declaration of Independence, that all men are created equal with these rights of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Under Cloward and Piven, you can't go after your life, your liberty, and your pursuit of happiness. Government controls everything. And so we have this big battle of ideas going on right now, and we're seeing the effects through COVID-19 of what really happens when people, these bureaucrats and these politicians and interested parties are in power. They just take more and more power and want everyday people to just cower in their homes, not go to work, not go after their dreams. And so we're getting a real ability to kick the tires on what Cloward and Piven would actually do to everyday people.
Exactly, exactly. And now with this new stimulus money and all that, they're monetizing the debt, which puts individuals at more economic risk as well. I didn't mention that earlier, but they're attacking at every level to eliminate individuals from being self-sufficient. They are forcing people to be dependent on some form of government in order to survive.
Why? Why do you think they want to do that?
Power. Power. Centralized power. So it's not as much centralized government as it is centralized power. And if you can centralize the power and have everybody dependent on you, then you will be constantly in power, right? You can convince them that if they put anybody else in power, they will lose all their goodies. And I think President Trump is really upsetting that notion. He is proving that it's much better for people, and he's getting followers from typically Democrat followers, and the, even poor people are supporting President Trump, which completely destroys their modus operandi.
It's been completely exposed. Trump has, as you mentioned, a number of his successes, which was making life better for everyday people. And there's the dignity of work, the dignity of being industrious. And unemployment was at an all-time low. The economy was humming along. I know that many of us were very concerned about the debt, but that debt we have accumulated over a number of years under both Democrat and Republican administrations. I think that Trump felt that we got this economy really going and he got reelected, we could address that debt. Now with all the stimulus, I know that we're pretty concerned about it. I feel like it was kind of a rock and a hard place, though, with people losing their jobs because of government policy. I'm not sure I totally agree with it, but I think that he felt he needed to do something to try to prevent any kind of civil unrest, to try to reassure people. And so he kind of had to step in and do this. What do you think?
I guess he did. And like you said, it's not his fault. I think what he's showing is that he's taking care of individuals. This administration is about empowering individuals, entrepreneurs, small business, the backbone of the country, that kind of thing. That's what his administration is about, or that's what he's about. Whereas with the Democrats, it's all about the collective. It's social justice and groups, identity groups, racial groups, wealth versus poverty, you know, the haves and the have-nots. So they deal in labels, whereas President Trump deals in individuals, a very positive perspective rather than the negative perspective of have and have not. Rather than pitting people against each other, he's bringing people together. So he is the antithesis of every strategy they have, and he's proving that their strategies have a really great alternative that is much better for individuals and therefore the country. Okay. That's kind of the way I'm looking at it. But he's blowing their playbook into smithereens.
Well, you know, Jill, I think we need to continue this conversation, but we're just about out of time for this podcast. Why don't we do a part two? And we'll get that out as well, because there's so much information, even more that we'd like to go through. You and I were basing a part of our conversation on Cloward and Piven from Discover the Networks, which is David Horowitz's group. So how about if let's close this podcast and let's just do a version two within the next week or so?
That sounds great.
Perfect. This is Sounding Off with Kim Munson. Dr. Jill Vecchio was my guest.